SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com, from a increasingly desultory Louisville, where it is hot and humid, yesterday in the mid-80s, and that there's only one thing that spells around here, and that is some heavy weather, and it's going to come through. But let it come through now, if it's going to come through, right? That's the attitude. And once we get past tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, Oaks and Derby Day should be absolutely perfect. The Derby draw went almost perfect. I think everybody is in agreement that, you know, the only horse that took it, took a little dent in the fender, is Known Agenda, but it's hardly a death knell. Let's put it that way. When it comes to his chances, this morning on the racetrack, all eyes on a couple of horses that really have not seen yet. Saw Pass the Champagne for the first time this morning. Finally, Hidden Stash out there as well. For Vicky Oliver, I know he was there because I talked to Mac McBride and Brooklyn Strong. We were all looking for Brooklyn Strong. We never spotted him. For the most part, a good morning, and including a very scary individual, Ken McPeak. Kenny McPeak is coming into this race with his two horses. They're both King Fury and Crazy Beautiful. Every morning, catch the eye. If you were up early and you were catching the tweeting, you saw Nicole Russo. I retweeted Nicole's little video clips of Mandaloon and Essential Quality, who have gotten into a nice beat. And for those that were nervous about Essential Quality being a little ragged and a little, you know, ordinary in his two works leading up, he certainly seems to be moving fluidly into Saturday. We've got quite a bit to do, and we've already got our first pair of guests sitting close by. And in fact, I'm going to probably have to recycle, even though I'll take a picture. I'm going to have maybe just recycle that picture from a few years ago where Jake Ballas and Jonathan Kinchin and Pete Fornatale and Marshall Graham, we were over there. We were over by the other side. And, I've gotten very good at just sort of recycling, you know, a lot of these photos. We're going to talk to Jake and JK, get their impressions about Friday and Saturday and things overall. Let me do a quick sequence of news hits before we get started with them. And I don't know how many more of these sad messages I've got to pass along. But yesterday, for those that are veteran racetrackers and those that have been around, not just this racetrack, but Oaklawn, Hialeah years ago, Chicagoland, New York too, even. Donnie Richardson, who had stints as a jock agent both before and after his professional roles at racetracks, including rising to a vice presidency here at Churchill, the vice president of racing. There isn't anything around a racetrack that Donnie Richardson didn't do, starting as a tween. And I'm not kidding. He sold programs at 12 or 13. Did it at places like Latonia and Miles Park, and had literally a 60-year life and career on the racetrack. Donnie took ill the other night. His daughter took him to Norton, and I just was explaining to Jake and JK, the doctor said that it was described as dire, and there was nothing they could do. It's bizarre, but apparently that's the way it came down. And we'll probably talk to Dale Romans and probably try to get to Ben Huffman as well later this morning. You know, I've been coming here 20 years, as I said the other day when we talked about Wanda. And, Donnie Richardson was just an absolute institution on the racetrack, helping horsemen in every capacity. And he was the go-to for so many, for every reason, from Derby tickets to getting your stalls repaired and getting your barn painted, whatever, everything. Too sad that Derby week just seems to produce this. I mean, we started with John Ward, and I told you about Wanda in the elevators, and it. Very, very sad. So we'll talk more, though, about Donnie Richardson with those that dealt with him and worked with him alongside of him and were friends with him for years and years. Just kind of enough of these. Got to mention, too, I'll bring it up with Sid Fernando, hour two. Oklahoma and West Virginia have mounted their challenges of HISA, and there'll be more states entities that are going to challenge it, there's going to be plenty of court battle to go on. I'll also bring up with Sid that Jeffrey Russell, retiring from Keeneland, longtime sales director. Tony Lacey, terrific addition, though, moving in. So we'll let Sid mention that. I don't know if you saw the story yesterday, though, here's something uplifting. In addition to Jim McInvale betting probably at least $2 million on the Derby favorite, he also has partnered up with Churchill on a foster family program, an initiative. He's going to bring 300 foster care people, families, executive types, and other charitable administrators from Maryhurst and Boys and Girls Haven that have long been associated with Churchill. But Mattress Mac, his own daughter and son-in-law, had a foster child who they've now adopted. And Mac's generosity really knows no limit, it seems. This was, I thought, really wonderful and one of those nice gestures that, will have long-reaching positive impact. Plenty more to talk about. I want to slip in Belterra, Evangeline, Thistledown, all adding to the openings this week. Yesterday, of course, at Fairmont. They did $500,000 at Fairmont yesterday. God bless them. Seven races. And, of course, Finger Lakes on Monday. So the whole springtime, springtime in racing and the moves to various venues. Oaklawn's cards are all pretty much done. Not pretty much. They're done. The Oaklawn stake will close things out. And it's got an interesting field, actually. And you'll probably get a Preakness starter out of that race, possibly. Let's table the rest of the news, and I've even got some of the results from yesterday. Those races at Parks ended up being well worth looking at. And then here we had one big price that kind of shook up the sequence. But it was a good day of racing, as promised, and not as good as what's coming. Joining us, as mentioned, Jonathan Kinchin, Jake Ballas. Good morning.
Steve, what's going on?
Good morning, Steve.
It's good to see you. Good to see you both.
It feels a little bit more normal, right? Last year, obviously, we missed Derby this time of year. And then even when Derby did happen, I think a majority of us, at least I was still stuck in to Saratoga. So it's nice to have this opportunity back just to kind of mill around the backside and to kind of start to feel the energy and people asking that same question over and over again. Who do you like? And it never gets old, especially this week.
Jake, what have you been up to, by the way?
Well, we got about 75 people coming for the Kentucky Oaks. So between planning that and raising my 2-year-old daughter, and everything's been pretty busy.
Well, we'll talk about the entrant, and we'll get some opinions. If how firm is everybody's opinions?
Oh man, I'm always pretty close to being locked in. We'll see. I mean, obviously some changes happen, and that's one of the deals, just kind of being around and hearing people talk and hearing people say this, that, and the other, and trying to dissect the "I love my horse" in the fifth situation. It's always fluid, but. You know, one of the things I love about these big days is you can kind of get away with looking at these races sometimes without past performances. You know, you think about that 2-day pick six. I'm excited about all grade ones. You know, most fans that are plugged in all the time could likely get away with looking at that without having to pull up the past performances. You know, these horses. And so those are always fun opportunities. That's what's so fun about Derby and Oaks Week.
And that's, you know, what you just said is really that there's a germane point there. One of the big differences between this and Breeders' Cup and the volatility, you know, there may be volatile results in the Derby, and particularly when it comes to the exotics. But compared to the Breeders' Cup, where invariably, no matter how well prepared you might be, there's horses you just don't know. And you know, there's just, you know, the 125, 135 entrants. And, you know, if you're lucky, you're familiar with 2/3 of them. And then you got to go, you know, research a bunch. And even then, it's not like, you know, any other stakes Saturday where, you know, you're going to be familiar with, you know, pretty much everybody in the field. This, we've been tracking these horses literally for 9 months, 10 months.
Yeah, sometimes even longer than that, right? You know, one race I'm really excited about is seeing Colonel Liam lock horns with the two Chad Brown runners, Domestic Spending and the other one. Domestic Spending and
not Fabius,
Digital Age.
Thank you.
It's just going to take a second. That was no PPs, too. I told you, you can do it on these days.
You're gonna leave Smooth Like Straight out.
Well, I think Smooth Like Straight has a little defined against those three. We'll see.
Okay.
Don't tell Michael McCarthy that.
I want to get your itinerary too, because you're obviously the America's Day at the Races sequence. What's the broadcast plan the rest of the week?
Yeah, Gary and I are here today on FS. I think we're two. I don't know, FS1, FS2. Go to YouTube, the Naira YouTube. We'll do all the races from Churchill today. Gary and I will be here tomorrow. Belmont obviously will be back. They have that pick six carryover as well, so we'll be involved those 2 days. Tonight I'm heading back to Lexington to do a seminar with Medallion Racing in Lexington.
Fun.
With Michelle Yu and Pete Fornatel. And then tomorrow night I'm doing a live stream with Joy Taylor from Colin Cowherd's show for FS. I think she's on FS1. I'm doing that with America's Best Racing. And then Friday and Saturday, I will be partaking in adult beverages, rooting Jake's Philly past the champagne home.
Ah, well, and the champagne may get past. Saw her for the first time, as mentioned, this morning, which was nice. And, you know, there were plenty of people, maybe too many people, that were all excited going into the Ashland. Let's talk about the Oaks first, actually, and let's talk about that in particular. Not fair to say that, you know, she moved early. She moved at a time when it was appropriate for her. Then came the giant woman movie. Here came Malathat, which, you know, if not for her, she wins the Ashland.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that we got run down. And you know, if Sheikh Hamdan doesn't pass away, Malathat is running in the Gulfstream Oaks, and we wouldn't have seen her. And,
that's a good point.
You know, instead of being 15-1, we're probably 5-1. And but now, you know, we asked her. You know, she stepped up off a maiden win, and so we were asking a lot of her. We were very confident going in that she would run big. I think she exceeded our expectations, and you know, there's been a lot of criticism from people I know that Javier did move too soon. I don't think he did. I think he made the winning move. You know, he had never ridden her before, and he didn't understand how explosive her turn of foot is. And so when she made that move, and she opened up by 4 in a blink of an eye. So I don't think he moved early. I do think that this race, he knows her a lot better. Second time, 2 turns. And, you know, hopefully we're good enough to turn the tables on Malathat, who I think is the best filly in the country.
And I also think that the thing about that is especially dissecting it right after the race and then continuing to kind of think about it and try to understand the ride. You know, that short stretch there, we're so used to everywhere else in the world, that might have looked like an early move. But in a short stretch race, that wasn't an early move. You're just, your eyes are conditioned at that point of a race that that would have been potentially early. But he got her in the clear. He could have got her stuck in behind horses, and then people would have been mad about that. She comes out. She explodes and opens up by four. And like you guys mentioned, she got run down by what I think most people would say consensus is the best filly in the country at this point. So I think she's extremely live. And if she can improve going the extra distance, improve third start for George Weaver, improve with her second two-turn race, improve with Javier knowing what he has underneath him to make the decisions he needs to make, you know, feels a little bit like Catherine Sophia, and Javier was on her that day as well. Mm. Right? She got beat in the Ashland in a tricky situation. Then she comes back and she runs impressively in the Oaks.
Now, a good analogy. And one thing that when I sat down last night and had a chance to, you know, put together, you know, figs with, you know, with PPs, this group is closely bunched. There is, you know, yes, Malathat and maybe Search Results and a couple of the other, you know, lower priced candidates are you know, top of the mark to start things out. But there is not a lot of separation between this whole field.
Yeah, and one of the things I always start with when we're looking at these two races, the Derby and the Oaks, is I try to identify which prep races were good and which ones weren't, because it's so hard to make decisions because you kind of like all of them. You can kind of get into all the stories. They're all well-bred. They all have good connections. And I've made a decision that the Fairground Oaks and the Gulfstream Park Oaks are the two races I'm going to be fading. I'm going to try to beat Travel Column and Clairiere, who both needed perfect trips to beat one another. I'm going to try to beat Crazy Beautiful. The figure wasn't that fast. Milfoy looked like a winner and then kind of hit that wall. So I'm going to try to beat those horses. And when I left Keeneland on Bluegrass and Ashland Day, I said in the car, I think we saw the Derby and Oaks winner run today. Whether it's Malathat or Pass the Champagne, or whether it's you know, Essential Quality and even a little bit lesser so Highly Motivated, I just felt like those two races happened to produce what I think will be the Derby and Oaks winners.
We had this a little bit just in passing with Nick Tamaro yesterday after the Derby draw, and Nick's high on the Fantasy and was, you know, talking about Pauline's Pearl moving forward. You mentioned Crazy Beautiful. I came here not really all that, you know, interested or excited, and that's why I brought up McPeak at the beginning here. On a morning-by-morning basis out there, the two of them look tremendous, both Crazy Beautiful and King Fury. I mean, King Fury has, it seems, even a bigger assignment than, much bigger assignment, stretching from the mile and a 16th to the mile and a quarter than Crazy Beautiful does coming out of that Oaks win. But I'm scared of both of them. And, you know, there's a limit to, in terms of building these tickets, to how, you know, how many you're gonna use. Travel Column and Clairiere, I don't have knocks on them, but I'm finding myself, you know, sort of having trouble placing them in a bet scenario. I mean, obviously, Jake, you got a contender here at a key price too, 15-1, and should be every bit of that, I'd imagine.
I think lower.
I think she'll be 6-8-1.
No, not, can't be that.
I don't think
low.
She'll be six.
Can't
I think
be
she'll
that
be,
low.
I think she'll be 10.
You know what?
I don't understand
the we get beat ahead, and trust me, I like the 15-1, and I hope she goes off at 15-1, but. You know, we get beat ahead to the favorite, who's 5-2, and we're 15-1. I don't see that big of a discrepancy between the two.
I think what they're trying to – I think what – I'm giving him Mike Battaglia the benefit of the doubt. I think what he was trying to predict is that Brad Cox is going to take money more than the individual. Mm-hmm. Steve Asmussen's going to take money more than the individual. Malathat, and then Search Results is going to take a ton of money too. She's undefeated. Chad Brown.
Yeah, Chad and I.
So I just think that mathematically, if all of those horses take money, then that leaves horses like Pass the Champagne to be higher prices than one might think they deserve to be. But I think she'll be like 10-1.
All right.
I think she could get wise guy-ish, whatever the heck that means. Well, I just think that there's people that are going to try to beat those other horses with logical horses, and she feels like one.
Well, if she gets wise guy-ish, it's because you guys were trumpeting her into the Ashland, and then, you know, seconds past the wire, we're saying we've got our Oaks horse. I mean, so if the wise guy status came from you guys, it's your, yeah. What do you exactly? Almost pipe fall. Down.
I'll take responsibility.
You know, I think that Mraz is an interesting filly in that race as well.
McCarthy,
you know, two back the filly ran very, very well, and it was just weird in the stretch when she kind of went to the rail. Rispoli looked over, and it got beat a nose. The last race, I'm just going to draw a line through, and I think Mraz will be alive. Live long shot.
Interesting. On that front, the other Nick was pushing Pauline's Pearl, and I didn't have much affection for her. The two horses, one horse that I early on in the winter that I latched onto was Will's Secret, and I've got no reason to, you know, especially, you know, given her presence in the Ashland, mm-hmm. And the other horse that is on the muscle out here every morning is Milfay. I mean, she's and Rosario's going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat. But if you're looking, you know, if you're looking for that other than Bullwinkle, he's the right guy.
Yeah, Joel's known to pull the rabbit out of the hat, but, you know, occasionally he'll put the rabbit in the hat as well.
You know, she ran very, very well as a 2-year-old, and the Devona Dale was a head scratcher. And then she barely got beat by a couple lengths to McPeak. So, you know, she did run with Malathot as a 2-year-old.
Yep.
I had Jack Jenkins on our Monster podcast we did, and Jack pointed out something I thought was interesting, that she's made the lead 3 times, and 2 of those times she's given it up. That kind of at the top of the stretch, in his thought was that she feels like the type of horse that might actually appreciate a surface change, where she has that turn of foot, she looms into position. And then, you know, as the distances get longer, at that point she said, I've had enough.
But she also, I mean, she has turf pedigree as well. Right. So that makes a lot of sense what Jack said.
Well, she is out here every morning, and it's all the exercise rider can do. And she does not look like, you know, like she's faint of heart, the girl that's on Milfay. And yesterday she had trouble pulling her up on the backstretch after the gallop. I mean, there was something. So I went back and looked at all the, you know, looked at figures and looked at, you know, at results and replays. And she's in that group with Pass the Champagne and Pauline's Pearl and Will's Secret, that, you know, there's going to be an invader or two. I mean, if you assume that, you know, some of the obvious, you know, one or two out of three of the top choices run their race. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this is the equation we get here every year, which is why it's so much fun. The 14 horse Oaks on Friday, and then, you know, a 20, 19, 18 horse Derby. And, figuring out building the play is as important as just the raw handicapping. And there's people that are so good at it. I mean, the pyramid, you know, pyramid scheme, you know, keying a horse, maybe first, second, and third, and then, you know, 6, 7. Jonathan, you've done that with tries and supers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I would say maybe 6 years ago, I really started to kind of watch Nick Tamaro's ticket construction, and then, you know, subsequent conversations with the Matisses and seeing what Mike Maloney and Sean Bord, the guys who do it for a living, right? Seeing how they can construct those tickets. This is a great opportunity to take a horse that you think is a nice, attractive price and build tickets around them. I always tell new players all the time when they ask me, like, how do you win? Well, whatever. And I always tell them that the mistake that most people make is that you spend 5 hours handicapping and then you create your wager as you're walking to the window. Let's try to spend an hour handicapping. Let's build tickets for 2 hours and see if your results are different. And it's not as fun as handicapping, you know, ticket construction, and it can be time consuming from time to time. Jake and I have that conversation all the time. You know, we trying to like rush to the track and try to get there. The pick five starts in 22 minutes. Well, it's a lot easier just to make a caveman ticket if you have 22 minutes. But I think that you're playing from behind if you do that.
On that topic, and we'll hit a couple of spots and actually dive into the Derby view. Jake Ballas with us and Jonathan Kinchin. And on the betting menu, we were talking about the $2 two-day all grade one pick six, two on Friday, four on Saturday. You got the they got their force out 20-cent version, their Derby City play. The Oaks Woodford. It's not the Woodford anymore. I tell you these bourbons.
Old Forester.
Old Forester now, which is based in Louisville, and actually is as old or older even I understand than anything Lexington way, but it drives me nuts between the Crown Royal American Turf and then the Crown Royal dissipated, and they got to stop changing.
This is called the Bourbon American.
There we go. There we go. Where's your bankroll application go over the 2 days? What percentage toward the multi races? What percentage individual races, doubles, etc.? Lay out a typical bankroll application, Jake.
On Friday, I'm basically going to focus just on the pick five, the late pick five. I don't even know if it's late. Whichever one that ends in the Kentucky
in the Oaks,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to focus on pick three and a double, mainly just because I'm keying my filly and everything I'm doing. So I'm going to have a big double, big pick threes, and a pick five, and I will get in on the $2 pick six. Most likely, I'll just partner on that. But my main focus Friday is the pick five, and then I will change up my strategy for Saturday, since we have too many people at the races on Friday, so it's going to be very hard for me to focus on, playing exactas and win bets and da-da-da-da-da when we have so many partners and friends and family in. So it'll be more entertaining for me than betting a bunch on Friday.
Which, it is an underreported portion of this, and one thing that's certainly I think become evident to probably a lot of people over the past year, who were unable to go to the racetrack, I think people have come to understand if you're going to go have a day at the track, it's social and pleasurable. I guess there's people that can compartmentalize and tune out the extraneous and get their bets done. I'm not one of them. And, Jonathan, you understand this. I mean, if you're on set, it's even, you've even got less opportunity. But when you're walking around and you see people you know and you haven't seen, and especially at a place like Saratoga and Keeneland, seasonal events, sitting at home, quietly, solitary, with your computer, with your monitors, and betting. I mean, that I think the purity of that and the way you can focus, that's really been a lesson I think a lot of people learned and are not going to forget.
Right. I mean, I think this game is so much fun because it's not the agony of sitting on your couch needing the Patriots to kick a field goal that means nothing to them, that means a lot to you. And I like being at the track with friends, participating in adult beverages and having fun.
Like, you said that twice.
Well, because it's important to me, Jake.
It's obviously on his mind. He's been working toward it now all week.
Let's see if you have any adult beverages on Friday.
Just champagne.
And then, on these big days, I am a huge – I know how much I can bet for the day if I was playing doubles and pick threes and exactas and wins and all this stuff. I take that number in my brain and I just apply it to multi-race bets. And I get them in before I get there, and then I just hang out and have fun. Take a screenshot of what my ticket is. I know what I'm alive to, and go that way. It's just I can – because I have access to this room, like media, I could bring my bag and set up my computer and stuff. It's just I've just learned that it just doesn't work out. And I never go to the racetrack without my backpack, with my laptop and my iPad, never. And Friday I won't. Saturday I might, because I might play the Express Bet contest, the Derby contest. If I do that, then maybe I'll have it, because I do need to be able to see Will Pays and things like that. But my majority of my money, I will play the pick five on Friday. To be tied in with that stakes action. It's not going to be a huge swing, but I'll be involved. I'll be alive to pass the champagne and Malathot, and I'll be alive to them equally. Normally, I try to press up what I think is more likely to happen. I think it's fair to say that we all think that Malathot's probably the most likely winner, but because of my connection to and from a personal standpoint and from a handicapping standpoint, I'm going to have pass the champagne equal in that pick five. My biggest bet will probably be the two-day pick six. The $2 pick six, you know, Steve, I'm sure you've talked about this quite a bit and various guests have tried to get this point across to your listeners. But what Naira did by going back to the dollar, what Keeneland has with the dollar in this wager with $2, smaller players, I promise you, this is not a disadvantage for you. This is an advantage. You just have to become a better ticket constructor. And if you can do that, you're going to have a much better shot. I am pretty sure. And maybe someone knows better than I do. I'm pretty sure the computers stay away from these two-day wagers. They don't. I don't think they like them. I don't think that it works into their plan. And the $2 minimum makes it even harder for them to cover all the combinations to take the meat off the bone for people like us. Participate in wagers like this that are good for the player so that other racetracks will do them. The Rainbow Six became what it did in this country because horse players supported it. And these racetracks say, well, look at our handle numbers. Why would we change it? People do like it. And so, you know, I always want to try to vote with my dollar, and I will be voting the $2 pick six. And then I'll obviously play the 20-cent pick six on Saturday. It's just such a big pool, and it's a mandatory payout. I try to even stay away from mandatory payout days because I feel like it's kind of rewarding the theory. But it's such a good opportunity, and if you're going to play this game, you kind of have to tackle those. Those will be my three biggest wagers. And then I'll just kind of move around on the fly on my phone. If I get excited about a double, what it's playing, you know, I'll throw that in. Or I'll slide to a window. It's always nice to have a paper ticket in your pocket a couple times a day when you're on the track. So, yeah, those are going to be my three big swings.
One thing that we've over the years we've suggested, particularly at Breeders' Cup and a little bit here, given these cards and they're probably. There, you know, people already talking about Gamin being a major lean and a single on multi tickets, but still, a lot of times, I'll add in the suggestion that you know if you're a pick four player and you, this is more a limited budget reach. If you're a pick four player, bet some doubles and pick threes. And if you're a pick three player, bet doubles. Dial it back, you know, one leg, one increment, because of the difficulty factor. And I think it's good advice. I mean, even people that are three horse players, tri players. Heavy it up on the exactas to some degree. It does seem that you know if you apply your typical bankroll and your typical approach when it comes to these particularly these races these two features, you end up somewhere along the line with a miscue. And you know, dialing back and putting less of a burden on yourself to be right is maybe one leverage against getting wiped out.
Yeah, I think one of the things you can do also, and it's hard as heck to do it on Derby and Oaks Day or Breeders' Cup Day, is if you're doing your pick five ticket on Saturday and you've found that you're using 10 in the Derby, look, play the pick five, right? It's the pick five. It's Derby Day. You deserve that. Do it. Play the pick five. But I would also take a couple of dollars and play the pick three within the sequence that you actually think you have an opinion, because you clearly don't have a Derby opinion.
Well, build all your plays around your strongest, the ones you feel strongest. And even if your handicapping wasn't great and turns out to be a little off, you still did the right thing, and you triggered one thing that's got to be we got to remind people. Make sure you've reserved your part of your bankroll for the biggest part of the day. Do not get to Derby and have, you know, look at your account or you know, look at you know, where you are and realize I don't have the ammunition that I've been looking forward to for months.
But when you say biggest part of the day, what if your strongest opinion is earlier on in the card, and that's
fine. That's fine.
So you don't mean just the Derby?
No,
I got you.
But
unless you're going to be a person who's going to be really upset that you didn't get to bet the Derby,
I understand.
I mean, I've been to 12 Derbies in a row, and two of them I didn't have any money left for the Derby. I was a fan, and that's because the ATMs run out of money here. But
the ATMs or the account?
Both. Yeah. No, but if you're gonna sit on the couch and be bummed out that you're rooting and you know you don't get to get your little exact in or whatever, Steve makes a good point. And then Steve, you always remind people to fund early as
yep.
well. Don't ask for that trouble trying to fund on whatever ADW you use. Don't wait till Saturday morning.
Go get, you know, whether it's a PayPal thing or whether it's a Green Dot or any of the, you know, all the various manners. Make sure it's done by Thursday, and if you're only playing Saturday, make sure it's in by Friday. You don't want to be on the phone with, you know, with your debit card company or whatever else. Just get out ahead of that. And we should remind, too, I mean, you got the opportunity, you know, for those that don't have accounts, this is about as good a week to open one as you're going to find. And
most places will take care of you.
Well, Naira's got, I'll give everybody our, we've got a sign up. I never push these like I should, but this is a good week to do it because you'll have, you know, they'll kickstart your online playing career, to say the least. Let's turn our attention to Derby. Jake Ballas with us, and Jake and his team, along with Randy, right? With the one
greatest.
And only Randy Hill.
Randy Hill. He's
pass the champagne.
I wish Randy was here. We would have got him on.
When's he coming?
Thursday.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the best.
He is.
Now, the question everyone keeps asking me is who's going to have a better shirt, Jonathan or Randy, for the Kentucky Oaks? What's your opinion?
Randy might be subdued.
It's hard to subdue Randy.
I don't even know what I'm wearing.
I'm gonna say Randy will have the. I'm gonna go with something in an animal print vein.
I hope so.
Do you know what you're wearing yet?
I don't know. I thought about wearing my shirt, my JK shirt, but we're out of them, so I don't. What's the point of wearing it if no one can buy it? Right?
Save it for when they're restocked.
Yeah,
there you
exactly.
go. There you go. All right, let's talk about yesterday and this field of 20, and you know, and certainly the horses that came into focus and came into the field essentially over the last 96 hours. I mean, we do have, you know, that weird phenomena where, you know, there's horses that you did not expect to end up in here. That includes King Fury and maybe the most annoying horse, Keep Me in Mind. We've been talking for a week, 2 weeks, about Mandaloon being a referendum horse and what do you do there? Suddenly, here's Keep Me in Mind. And I joked all last week they were running the Kentucky Jockey Club. And so I watched him rally over and over and over and over again. And, you know, horses that like this racetrack like it a lot. And Keep Me in Mind has looked very good coming into this. So he gets jumped in. Brooklyn Strong, who, was on the shelf 10 minutes ago. He's in this field. So we did have some things happen that we let's say, didn't expect. The rest of the field, the other 17, were pretty well, you know, even Obisos and Hidden Stash, who we knew were going to get in. So you had 17 out of 20. You had a lot you knew about them. Jonathan, start us off and talk about the top down in terms of the major players and the major win candidates, you know, who you think can win this race. And then we'll figure out, who is the right combination to put with them.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, obviously the conversation starts with Essential Quality, you know, undefeated champion. I didn't like him in the juvenile, and then I've just kind of warmed to him as we've gone along, and then as some of the others have defected. One of the things that really sticks out with him to me is I had Brad Cox on my podcast JK Plus One, and he had mentioned that After Essential Quality's first work, he looked to his assistant and said, "That's our Belmont horse." So as a two-year-old, if you have the impression that this horse is going to go a mile and a half, it makes me feel like the mile and a quarter is going to be exactly what he wants. And I think he's – I've seen some numbers that suggest he's probably faster than maybe the buyer might see, suggest. I just think that he's not going to get tired when we're talking about a bunch of horses that do in these mile and a quarter races. I don't think he will. I'm not crazy about betting him at the price he's going to be. And I think it's very important to mention that Mattress Mack's involvement is going to mm-hmm. impact his price.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, just like talking to random people in the know of the Mattress Mack situation, my thought, and just from contests that I've played in and making big bets in contests, is my suggestion would be, if I was Mack, to bet it early, like first flash early. Make every other price look good. Make people look up and see Rock Your World at 18-1, and then they're betting. And then throughout the day, you're sucking money into other horses. And obviously at the end, it'll probably level out. But I think an earlier move could impact that. So I wouldn't get carried away with the prices on other horses until it gets a little bit closer to post time. But he is going to be short with that money coming in. And then the other one I think that deserves a conversation is Known Agenda. I mean, I thought he was extremely live. I thought he was a horse that had an opportunity. And to be fair, it's not ideal, but you're going to get about three more points on your odds mm-hmm. than you were going to.
Yep.
And who would you rather have riding from the rail than Irad, who's riding better than anybody else in the country right now? I mean, if someone's going to work out the trip to win from down there, if that was a wager, who can win from the rail? Right now, to me, it would be Irad, just the way he's been riding. So I think those two are where the conversation start. And then quickly, I'll touch Hot Rod Charlie. I think is interesting. He's obviously can get the distance. He ran well going a mile and 3/16, and he's trained by a guy that I've always heard 2 minute licks him around there, and that's mm-hmm. why they run the mile and a quarter so well. And I'll have another and Nyquist. So those are where my attentions are. But I'll probably be leaning pretty heavy on Essential Quality. I just think he's better than the rest of these horses.
Very well could be the case, and that's a fair assessment. I'm not going to argue against anybody taking that approach. Before we talk prices, Jake, who's on that pass the champagne double ticket into the Derby?
It's Essential Quality, and I had Caddo River, Essential Quality, and Life Is Good, so I'm down to one, but I'm happy about that. I'm not eager to go bet on Essential Quality. I think it's going to be he'll be very short. The other horse I'm interested in is the other Brad Cox.
Mandaloon.
They've always liked Mandaloon. The horse has done nothing wrong until the last race, and I don't understand the last race. So if you draw a line through that, you're going to get, good odds on Brad Cox and a Judmont horse. So I really do like that, the Mandaloon. And, Irad on Known Agenda, everyone's making a big deal about the one, which it could be detrimental. But since they put the new starting gate in,
it's not as bad.
The auxiliary gate, so I don't think it's as bad. There's not enough statistics to say this is horrible. It's not ideal. And then I'm going to throw in Bourbonic. I know it wasn't a very good Wood Memorial. Maybe it's just because I'm rooting for Kendrick because he's such a good guy and I like to see him succeed. But I know the horse wants the distance. And if they can get any kind of speed, which at the Derby, they usually you get a hot pace.
Yep.
I think that horse will come running and could fill out the super.
Jonathan, back to you. Now, regarding the ticket building exercise and layering in the Exacta try and super and for the adventurous, the high five players, because that pool grows every year very quietly and without a lot of attention. How do you striate? What's your strata on the exotic candidates?
Yeah, but I think that if you're playing this, depending on what your budget is, if you're playing the superfecta, super high five, and maybe even the trifecta a little bit, I kind of like the idea of like kind of a double key, where essentially you find that most likely winner, let's just for the sake of this conversation, let's call it Essential Quality. So you'll key him in first, second, and third with all the logical horses you can come up with, and you don't necessarily need my help for the logicals. And then also finding kind of a price horse to key as well. And essentially what you're saying is that my price horse and my top choice are going to run in the number. So, you know, I think Keep Me in Mind would be interesting as a horse that could really add some value running third, fourth, and fifth.
Yep.
I think Sainthood interesting third, fourth, and fifth. I just trust Todd. You know, look at any stallion barn and there's a Todd Pletcher in there that ran long on the dirt. That's what he does. And he can get horses to excel in that arena. And although Sainthood's performance was last time was on synthetic, I think he's an interesting horse. Mandaloon, I think will probably come down a little bit. I'm not sure he's going to be kind of that kind of bomb horse I'm talking about, you know, 18, 20, 25 to 1, 30 to 1 or above. And then one horse that really kind of grabbed my attention is Midnight Bourbon.
Yep.
Steve hasn't won this race, but they run well in here. Looking at Lee ran well in here. Gunrunner ran well. And I just feel like, you know, and obviously Curlin, I just feel like Midnight Bourbon just kind of shows up and he runs his race and he runs the same number and he just kind of gallops along there. He's tactical enough to be in good position. And you know what you're going to get from him. And you got Mike Smith, which, you know,
doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt at all. So I think he's interesting as a kind of an underneath type.
The horse like Midnight Bourbon is Medina Spirit, who just it kind of runs those even fractions and you know, hits boards and they seem very similar. And Midnight Bourbon certainly has made a terrific impression all I've been here.
I struggle with it. It's maybe something I got it, and it bites me from time to time. But I struggle with maybes from the Baffert Barn, the Cox Barn, the Chad Brown Barn, because everyone else is using them because it's Baffert. And if I have a maybe on a horse that's trained by them, I try to fade them because I feel like there's value there if you can save money. I mean, it's more of a multi thing. You know, if there's a Chad runner in the fifth leg of a sequence and it's a maybe, I try to beat that horse. And that's – it might get me in trouble with Medina Spirit because he's obviously gutty and he showed us that in the Robert Lewis. But I'm going to try to get skinny and work around him.
Who else among those middle, you mentioned Chad, you haven't really had a highly motivated reference.
It's weird. Like, you know, we talk about, you know, buzz horses when you're hanging around the track. After his last work, he was a buzz horse. But then I've heard people say that they didn't love the way he was galloping. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I just know if they have four legs and a tail, that's basically the basis of my opinion. He's interesting, and if you like essential quality, I think you have to kind of like him to a certain extent on how he ran in the bluegrass. I'm not going to be cutting in line to bet highly motivated, but I do think he's interesting. I tell you one horse I am going to try to beat, and I don't like, is Rock Your World. He got loose last time. He's going to get more pressure than he's gotten before. He's going to be going further than he's gone. I'm going to try to beat that horse. I know this is a kind of a poor comparison, but he reminds me a little bit of Sydney's Candy, who I fell in love with after wiring the San Diego Derby. Now that took place on a synthetic surface, so I get the difference there. But I'm going to try to beat Rock Your World, and I think that it didn't help with Soup and Sandwich drawing outside of him.
Any other candidates? I'm reading quickly, going through and trying to find a. I'm glad you have an interest in using Keep Me in Mind, because I know I'm going to have to feather him in. Never expected to have to do that. And if you try to keep to your budget, and let's say you're keying a horse, you know, first and second, or first, second, and third, and then, you know, you're going to have maybe, you know, three by one. By four, by six or seven, when a horse like this suddenly comes across your radar screen, you got to push somebody out.
Yeah,
and it gets difficult.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, the Keep Me in Mind thing, that this is a Mike Maloney special. He talked about this horse and got my attention looking there, and I think your listeners obviously know this because they're listening to your show. But that's what this week is about. It's about gathering information. Because some people might see something that you don't, and that could be the difference between, you know, a trip to the ATM and a life-changing score. And keep me in mind, involved in your exotics is one of the recipes for a life-changing score.
I'm against keep me in mind, mainly. I think the horse was a very good two-year-old, and so far, turning three, it has not improved one bit, has regressed. So I'm not going to use keep me in mind anywhere on any ticket.
Those that want to take a positive view of him are saying the same thing, and very logically, that it was such a series of aborted plans that Diodoro had to deal with in terms of the weather and the anticipated start, and then moving and then shifting, and then until the prep season ended. This has now really been the first opportunity all winter that they've had to just plug along for whatever assignment, whether it was going to be a Preakness start or whatever they were going to end up doing. Certainly for those that just want to, base it on how a horse looks coming in, he's doing well. And from that standpoint, if you want to believe, I'll tell you one thing that Diodoro is doing is taking blinkers off, which, a lot of people, when it comes to stake races, depending on some histories and if it's an angle that they follow with certain trainers, that has been a successful gambit used by a lot of people. I have not done the work on that question yet. I haven't done that kind of deep dive for Saturday, but that's something I want to look at to see if Diodoro has done this successfully at other times.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about him, I think, is that you could kind of give him an excuse for that March 13th. I think that was during Snowmageddon down there, where he missed some training leading up to that. And then, I thought he was going to run well in that race against Concert Tour and Cattle River and the Rebel. And then in the Bluegrass, and I even talked to Diodoro yesterday. I interviewed him on the Fox show after the win in the stake yesterday. And he said that was our fault last time. We put him in the race and we shouldn't have. We were trying to stay closer and we shouldn't have. We should have just let him drop back and make one run. And so if they change the plans and just go to the drop back, make one run move, do I think this horse is going to win? Absolutely not. But I do think that he could run fourth. And then you got everything right in the super and you say to yourself, I can't believe this horse just beat me.
Well, and, there's a handful of horses like this, and they're going to get the pace. I mean, we're going to, even though Cattle River, we were so concerned about what was going to happen with Cattle River, in, out, not, even without him, that there's going to be pace. So for those that want to bet, keep me in mind to hit the underneath. If they want to bet, certainly Obesos is getting plenty of that kind of attention. I'll tell you one horse that we have not mentioned. I'm a little you kind of referenced Todd collectively. Dynamic One looks terrific, and I think he was the horse that pretty much everybody minutes after the wood. Everybody said, well, the wood of the wood horses, you want Dynamic One. He ran the race that you want going forward. He looks terrific. You get Jose Ortiz. He's 20-1, and it seems like he can kind of adjust to, whatever's thrown at him. I didn't expect that's another horse I didn't expect to have an interest in, and this happens. I'm out every morning to watch to watch them work and gallop, and I've had some successes when it comes to this, latching on to ones that kind of came in hot, and
I feel like I've started to have more success in the Derby when I give that more precedent, in my opinion, just how they're moving, what they're doing in the mornings.
Let me get, we got about 2 minutes, and I know you guys are going to head to the paddock because Pass the Champagne is going to school, and, George Weaver cuts a swarthy figure in that paddock. He's he's like a swashbuckler. Who else are we excited to bet on the 2 days?
I'm looking forward to watching Gamin run. I'll probably try to look in there to see if I can get anything clever, because if she gets beat, it's going to be a tough sequence. I'm excited about Faya,
that's
turf sprinter.
That's exactly who I was going to say.
I want to see him run. Joseph Migliori obviously was involved in that situation.
Bob Messiello.
Yep, rooting for that one. That'll be fun. And then, I think the old Forester is going to be fun to see who's going to kind of take that early crown for the best turf horse in America, whether it's going to be one of Chad's Klarovich runners or whether it'll be Colonel Liam or even a horse like Count Again or Smooth Like Straight. So that's going to be a fun race as well. Trying to think what else. I'm bummed out we're not going to see Charlatan. I thought that was gonna happen. That could have been fun. Let's see. I know who I'm excited to see. Aunt Pearl. I'm really excited to see her run on Friday.
Weren't we all excited to see Newspaper of Record too?
Take it easy. Take it easy. Yes, we were. It feels. I thought about that the other day.
Tread lightly.
Yeah, I thought about that the other day.
Tread lightly. You know what race? Going to have to get some attention, and maybe we'll get a chance. Later in the week, maybe tomorrow or Friday when you're relaxed. The Eight Bells.
Wide open.
It's terrific.
Terrific race.
Terrific. Terrific. And you know,
that race has me very confused.
Well, Day Out of the Office makes her return in this spot, and there was real questions where she would, if she would get here. Certainly easy to root for the Lieblongs. There's Abrogate, Super Sensational for Mrs. Weber, getting back to, I think, what she really wants to do. The 7/8, What's Wrong with Euphoric locally, with Bernie Flint, a filly that's come to hand, a frosted filly. Caramel Swirl won like a good thing. So you got two, you know, recent emerging types between Euphoric and Caramel Swirl, and Bernie Flint on big days in this building, Oaks Derby weekend. He's one of few.
And I'll tell you one more that's interesting in that race is Slumber Party, right? Slumber Party won the race that Jake bought Pass the Champagne out of. Slumber Party ran off the screen. Pass the Champagne ran second. Jake and them got the deal done to buy her after that. So she didn't run well last time at Keeneland. But if she runs the race that she ran at the Gulfstream, she'll be tough.
Well, there's a ton of speed in here. There's no shortage of speed, and we have sped through 45-plus minutes. Jonathan Kinchin, America's Day at the Races, the next few days, and then, you know, look for him hugging and kissing and carrying
an adult
on
beverage.
And having adult beverages. Buy him an adult beverage. And if he's doing real well, he'll buy you one, Jake. Best of luck. Safe trip.
Thank you.
For Pass the Champagne. And nothing better than being able to call George Weaver on a Monday and congratulate him on Vacoma or whoever. So
I hope you're calling him Monday.
There you go. Exactly. And not about some New York bred that wins on Belmont on sound. Guys, go see her over there.
Thank
Jake
so
Ballas, everybody, and Jonathan Kinchin to get us rolling into Derby Oaks coverage. And as I mentioned at the top of the morning, the top of the show, the news yesterday that was just really heartbreaking, that Donnie Richardson, at just 75, is gone. And there's any number of local institutions at this venue to call, and certainly Dale Romans was the first person, even yesterday when I heard that, I wanted to reach out to, and he joins us now. Dale, good morning.
Yeah, it's a solemn morning here at Churchill Downs.
You know, it's hard for people you know, that aren't, if you're not, I guess if you aren't on the racetrack, Dale, you know, this is an individual who, you know, whose name you might have heard and you've seen quotes or when he was a jock agent, et cetera. But for those that worked and, you know, had to go to Donnie for help as a horseman or whatever capacity, and those that worked under him, you know, in his racing management career, and all the jocks like McCarran and Don Brumfield, etc. This is a monumental passing.
It's like one of the spires tipped over. And you know, Donnie grew up and went to school. I can see from where I'm standing right now on the track at Churchill Downs, the school he went to. And it was him and Butch Lear, Mike Hargrave, Jerry Botts. They all went to that school, and every one of them came over here and went to work right after high school in one aspect or another. And growing up here, I mean, I had five leading trainers titles, and when they came around, I would shiver in my boots like a little kid again if I did something wrong or disappointed them. And Donnie did a lot of things for Churchill Downs that people have no idea about. Donnie's one, he was out here one day for Derby training and saw a Derby horse almost get run into. He instituted the 15 minutes Derby horses only rule here at Churchill Downs. He one day ordered the front side. They renovated the whole front side. And he sees everybody standing outside the racing office, all the trainers and stuff, and no place to hang out. He put in and built the whole trainer's lounge, which people can't imagine wasn't there now that's used so often. He took care of all the press when they came to town. He just did everything, the little things that will live on a long time since Donnie's gone.
Unusual aspect of this, Dale, that you know, he wasn't feeling well the other night. His daughter took him to Norton, and then word came that there wasn't going to be any saving him. It's almost I can't even really connect those dots. It's so bizarre, but the fact that a number of people were able to get over to see him in his waning hours, it's the whole thing right. Is just bizarre.
Yeah, I think Donnie was sicker than people knew.
Maybe.
I think he'd been sick for a little while. He had a lung disorder, and they said he went on oxygen back in February. But I don't think anybody expected him to pass away as quickly as he did. And like I say, you're the first one that told me. I hadn't heard about it. You know, it's Derby week. We got our head down doing stuff all the time. And when you text me yesterday, it caught me off guard. I had not heard it. And then I started making my calls, and they said, yeah, it was true. He said he went in the night before. Never made it out. See?
So, it's hard.
We were very fortunate to know Donnie, and I'm very fortunate to work for Churchill Downs and the way it got shaped that Donnie had left the backside here when he retired from here.
And he was really one of those transitional connections. You know, Dale, it's funny for me because I've been coming, you know, now actually 20 – I first started coming here in 99, but I was lucky enough to really know that whole generation, and whether it was Meeker and Sexton and you mentioned Hargraves and Butch Lear, and this was a very different place 20 years ago. It's hard to believe, but one. You know, between Donnie Richardson and John Asher, I mean, there's your twin spires.
Yes, you're right. And there'll never be another classroom full of classmates that have such a big impact on any company as those guys we just talked about that all hung up and grew up together. And the love they had together collectively for Churchill Downs was incredible, and the way they took care of this place.
Donnie Richardson, and I imagine that there's a number of other horsemen that we'll talk to, not just this, not this week so much, because we pretty much are handicapping from here on in. But next week, as they come through, it's been a rotten week on this front, Dale. We started Monday regarding John Ward, and even even on a much more individual basis, learned of Wanda, the elevator operator, who was there for 20 years. She had passed earlier in the winter, and it just very tough.
Tough times.
Yeah,
John Ward's another great man. I mean, there's a guy that took Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Oaks. An institution, his father and uncle. People don't realize the deep roots in racing that the Ward family had.
Yep.
And, John was always kind to me. We started out in a barn together at Gulfstream Park 30 years ago. I was just a kid, and he was already a great horse trainer, and everybody said, you two won't get along in there. And he and Donna both became very close friends. And that was a surprise to me. I didn't realize he was that sick.
Yeah. That I actually, you're letting it out that Donnie may have been sicker than we all knew. They say that John really kept it fairly quiet that he had not been well. So it.
Yeah.
It's not doesn't seem fair, really, in both cases. Donnie just 75, and you know, thoughts to his daughter.
You know,
70s
aren't that old anymore.
No, exactly. Especially on the racetrack, right? I mean,
No, exactly.
They're
both too young. Both too young to go.
Dale Romans,
give me the opportunity to speak about it.
Well, and I've got to get, you know, while we got you, this will be the only chance. And a quick survey, Dale, before I let you go. Attachment rate in the Ali Sheba on Friday, and then you come back with Ultimate Badger and Sitting on Go. People have been waiting for Sitting on Go to get back to one turn. You also, of course, cross-entered attachment rate in the Churchill Downs for him potentially to one turn. Talk about the weekend for your barn.
We got a bunch of horses running. We'll run in the we're going to run in the Ali Sheba. I mean, it just makes sense, six horse field with attachment rate, and then Sitting on Go. I think he'd be my live long shot play of the weekend if I was looking for a horse with a little meat on the bones. I think he's really going to run well. I think hopefully the Derby back on first Saturday of May is a reboot for the industry, for our stable, and we'll get things rolling.
Why did you try so hard? We understand the ramifications of getting, you know, classic black type, but it did seem that, you know, that this was a horse, you know, begging for a cutback.
Well, there are only three ones. If you got a chance, right, you think to make a Derby horse, you try to do it. We can always back up and cut back.
Yeah.
After the first Saturday in May, it just didn't happen. Didn't work out. But he's doing good now.
Let me also get a quick hit on those two maidens at the early in the day and at the end of the day, Saturday, Flying Gem in the second and Curlin Lane in the 14th.
Yeah, I mean, I think Curlin Lane, they could both be horses that need a race. Neither one of them had a pedigree the first time starter winners, but they're both good horses and look to have a good future. You know, Flying Gem's a half sister to Tappet's Fly, my first Breeders' Cup winner.
We love Tappet's Fly for Mr. Jones.
I know,
Jones.
But it's going to be interesting to see her on the turf. You know, I know I only get to work her on the dirt. She does okay, but her sister just worked okay on the dirt, too. We put her on the turf. She came a multiple grade one Breeders' Cup winner.
Now, Flying Gem in the second for Frank Jones, Dale's other father. Since you don't have a Derby horse, give us your Derby view.
Everybody's asked me that, and that might be hard to believe, but I'm not a good spectator. I haven't kept up with it near as much as the rest of the world. If I'm not in the game, I don't watch. But I'm going to cheer for the two local guys, Greg Foley and Brad Cox. Let's try to get a Louisvillian to win a Kentucky Derby.
Well, that would actually fit the theme that that we started with Donnie, neighborhood.
Yep.
People from the neighborhood.
Right. People from the hood.
Dale Romans, everybody. Romans Racing on Twitter. I will hope to see you before Tina and I head north. Dale Romans, thank you.
You know where I am. Come see me. Talk to you.
I will. I will. Dale Romans, everybody. And a tribute to Donnie Richardson. Casey, we could go right to Sid. We probably should go to Sid. And we could... And let's do that. Let's go to Sid, and then we'll break after Sid. I'll tell you the rest of the, at least part of the lineup, the rest of the way. After Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. This has always been one of the most popular pushes of the broadcast week when it comes to Derby week. Sid's got a strong track record finding unusual horses based on pedigrees. He's brought up names that you hadn't heard anywhere else. So we'll see if that's the case today. Davis Rogers, usually Davis turns up with Darren on Thurby, but he can't come tomorrow. So the big Davis and Darren Rogers visit that we look forward to every year. Davis is virtually as tall now as his dad. So we'll get probably the last chance to get Darren while he's still you know, well, he's still mostly calm. Joe Clancy going to join us at the top of hour three. And as mentioned last week, the addition of the ThisIsHorseRacing.com team, Sean Clancy, Joe Clancy, Tom Law. And we'll talk to Tom here tomorrow. So you'll have heard from all three of the three-headed monsters of the This Is Horse Racing team. And I'll get Seth in as well today. And we'll look forward to Seth's Derby Oaks thoughts. Sid Fernando joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good, good. This is whistling by as it does every year, and that includes this morning as well.
I'm trying to keep my pregnant pauses to a minimum today.
No. Not at all. Not at all. Sid, before we talk Derby, there were two stories at least that I wanted to let you riff on. And first was the emergence of Oklahoma and West Virginia joining lawsuits against HISA. And I imagine that you saw most of the details involving it, and they pretty much are taking the tack that you brought out weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I had in that long conversation you and I had together. You know, I brought out the fact that for states particularly, this is a 10th Amendment issue, specifically a clause that's been explained and used in the Murphy versus NCAA decision by the Supreme Court. And that's the anti-commandeering clause of this particular amendment, which basically states that the federal government cannot have exactly what it says. They can't commandeer the legislative powers of a state. And that is actually, that ruling is what opened the floodgates and allowed, you know, the sports betting in New Jersey first, and now it's, you know, the gates are open. But that was, you know, that's something that I've been writing about, you know, for a long time. And regardless of what the HBPA lawsuit is, the structural legs of this issue are based around states' rights. And so it was, for me, it was fully expected that, you know, several states would immediately address this issue. And that's exactly what happened when Oklahoma and West Virginia joined.
Now, and also should mention that the Trotting Association, the quarter horse people as well, they they're on board. So there's a long way to go before this all plays out clearly. Sid, also, I it just occurred to me, you know, this morning when I was putting the news stories together. You know, we talk about sale results, but I imagine, you know, you've rubbed elbows with Jeffrey Russell over the years at Keeneland, and he's retiring. And boy, there's been, you know, a steady changing of the guard, particularly at Keeneland, the last year and a half or so. But Tony Lacy, tremendous choice to take over as director of sales.
Yeah, and I know, I know Tony much better than I do Jeffrey, and specifically because since the time that Four Star began, Four Star was kind of an offshoot of Walmart's sales arm. Began with Johnny T.L. Jones Jr., who I was really, you know, friends with, and the Great Houses and so forth. And Kerry Cawson worked for Johnny T.L. Jones. He runs it now. He was a partner with Tony Lacy. Francis Caron worked a long time at four-star as well. She left, and she works for me now, as our WTC Bloodstock editor. But Tony, yeah, Tony's a guy that, you know, has done a great job over there. And from what I understand, with the Shannon Ireland has started to, you know, put her team in place. What happened was, you know, there was originally a vice president of racing and sales, and they've kind of split that with the racing part, as you probably have mentioned before. Gatewood Bell took over that part, and the vice president of sales is now Tony Lacy. So she's got that team in place with Gatewood Bell, and he's a great guy too. Hat Creek Racing, you know, has had a lot of success, particularly with Leslie Ward, and now Tony Lacy, who's foreign born. I think he's the first foreign born vice president in sales there, and so you know. It's a new era, and you know, he's somebody I think that will add to the changing of what was really an old boys type of club. I think that's the big thing. Hopefully, Tony Lacy effects change culturally, and I think that's part of the reason he was brought in.
Nice. Well, next opportunity to visit on that front, you know. But I'll take the opportunity. But you know, with the you know, Nicholson and GD Hieronymus leaving and retiring, and you know, now Jeffrey Russell and Rogers Beasley, 2 years ago, and it's really been a refresh. It seems so.
Rogers Beasley was a guy that had Jeffrey Russell's job for a long time.
That's right. You know? That's right.
Yeah. Then he got moved up. I knew him quite well years ago as well, because he was married to his wife, Jackie, who used to work at the Blood Horse, a great writer. And so, yeah, it's, you know, things change and change is good.
Well, let's change to Derby conversation and probably some, maybe an Oaks thought or two as well. But let's start with Derby, Sid. And here we are. There was, you know, there was some movement at the bottom of the, you know, at the bottom of the Derby field. But some of the horses, it would not be unusual to see some of the late invaders. And we've talked about Brooklyn Strong, Keep Me in Mind, and King Fury, that trio being added late to the field. And horses that have been added late to the field have, I'll have to go do this and do some, you know, do some work and kind of look at charts and see if I can, you know, confirm and quantify it. But I think anecdotally, horses like this sometimes have impacted certainly the exotics in Derby, not necessarily on the win end, but be that as may, some thoughts about this field and you know, your final evaluation.
You know, it's like I was telling you last week, Steve. I think we're going to get some surprising runners odds-wise, you know, populating the top five or six spots. And, you know, the way I told you, I'm going to give you some horses. We pretty much discussed their pedigrees along the way, so I'm not going to go into the weeds on that. But, you know, I've been looking at the race, and I've just come to the conclusion that, and this is a interesting Derby because you've got some expensive horses in here, and you've got some really cheap horses in here. You've got horses like Medina Spirit, who is a $1,000 yearling and a $35,000 two-year-old. The horse you just mentioned that got in, Brooklyn Strong, was a $5,000 two-year-old. The other horse that got in, King Fury, was a $950,000 yearling.
Yep.
By Curling. You've got some of the best stallions represented, including the leading stallion in the country, Into Mischief, with three horses, Mandaloon, Highly Motivated, and Soup and Sandwich. You've got Curlin, the Hillendale flag bearer, with the new one that just got in, King Fury, and Known Agenda, who is one of several for Todd Pletcher in the race, but unfortunately, you know, drew the rail on this in this race. And you've got horses, the favorite by Tappet, the top, one of the top sires, it's not the top as well. And then you've got horses like Rock Your World by Candy Ride, an outstanding stallion. You've got three first crop horses, one of the ones you mentioned, Keep Me in Mind by Laoban, Helium by Ironicus. It's a $5,000 stallion at Claiborne. Keep Me in Mind was standing for 75. His sire, Laoban, was standing for 75 at Sequel in New York before he got moved to Windstar, where he stood for, he was standing for 25,000 now. And then Protonico stands for $5,000 or $6,000 at Castleman Lions. So you got three first crop sires as well. And then you've got, various other oddball horses. Obesos is by Orb, who was sent to Uruguay. You've got, you know, Oxbow is the sire of Hot Rod Charlie, stands at Calumet. Calumet, you know, has got a eclectic group of stallions there, and his Calumet owner, Brad Kelly, has, you know, he's got a program that's, he follows his own music, basically, and he's looking for stamina, and he kind of, the culture of Calumet has been to stand stallions that, you know, provide stamina, even European oddball lines too. It's oddball, quote unquote, for here. But at any rate, so it's a very eclectic mix. And as I said to you last week, I think, you know, with the pace scenarios and stuff, I think it's going to really set up for some closers. And with that in mind, I picked, I'm going to give you three horses, and then another three for the bottom. Most of these six horses are oddballs, but their trainers are the big deal guys. Todd Pletcher, Brad Cox, Bob Baffert, okay? And so the horse I like on top is Bourbonic.
Wow.
Or the Wood wow. Winner by Bernardini. And it's a bit of a Calumet exacta because he's a Calumet homebred, obviously. And I like Hot Rod Charlie, another big trainer, Doug O'Neill. I like him for second. Put him on top. Put the other one on top of this one, Hot Rod Charlie, with Brad Cox's horse, Essential Quality, third. So those, when I say third, I mean those are the three that I like in that position. And then below them, I'm going to put Dynamic One, who's a Phipps bred Union Rags. Medina Spirit, Bob Baffert's only horse in this race, and Obesos.
the local horse for Greg Foley. So that there's a mix of horses, six horses. I would play combinations with those, fool around with those six. And when you look at it, you've got your big trainers there. You've got Doug O'Neill, Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, who've all won the Derby, and Brad Cox, the up-and-comer, who, you know, is looking for his first one and certainly has the champion, two-year-old who's done nothing wrong this year coming into the race. That two-year-old form of the Breeders' Cup is right there with Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie. But the horse I like, Bourbonic, I've watched this wood so many times, and this horse was kind of hard to find. Maybe I just can't name one right off the top of my head right now, but this horse is so far off the main field. You know, he was really several lengths behind the group and dead last in the wood, off very slow fractions too that day. And if you look at him and you look at Dynamic One, who was beaten ahead in that race, Dynamic One was right in contact with the body of the race, made a really great move, a winning move, and this horse just came out of the clouds. So I think this is a horse that he's added blinkers, which has changed, it seems like he can trace his improvement to the point when he was when the blinkers were added. And he just seems like a horse that's peaking at the right time. The distance, I think, he's got a great blend of speed and stamina. I love the jockey on him. And, he seems like a horse that's going to avoid a lot of the traffic just because of his running style, and he's going to make that one run. A similar thing could be said for Obesos, too.
Yep.
So, as you can see, this group of horses I've pretty much picked are horses that are going to be running late. And which means basically I've taken away a lot of highly wanted contenders with speed out of the equation.
It does seem that we're getting a consensus that the pace wise, those that want to try to close are going to have a target. That part of the equation seems to be there, and I the Hot Rod Charlie question is he's an interesting inclusion just because we've been trying to figure out had this discussion with Nick Tamaro yesterday off the draw about horses that may have been in positions in prep. In prep mode that they won't necessarily employ on Saturday, meaning.
And I agree with that. Yeah.
I don't think
he's going to run like he did in the Louisiana Derby on the pace.
Yes. Well, yeah. And there's at least three horses that have that, maybe even more, maybe even four, if you, depending on how you view Rock Your World. Nick yesterday thinks that the early read after Caddo River came out was that Rock Your World, would potentially be your leader.
Yeah.
Highly Motivated was on the lead in the Bluegrass. He isn't and hadn't ever been on the lead before.
Right.
Hot Rod Charlie the same way. I'm going to include in that same group Soup and Sandwich, who has been forward. He was forward in his two starts, his two wins, but he was ridden to basically assure Derby points and was ridden aggressively at Gulfstream so that you know, he would be in position. Ideally, if he could have won, that would have been fine. But Mark Cassie wanted to get this horse to Derby for Mrs. Weber, and he doesn't necessarily have to have the lead. So there's a bunch of horses here that, you know, that have a nice, you know, a nice flow to their style, but aren't necessarily going to be where they were on their way here.
That's right. And on the flip side to that, a horse like Medina Spirit is a horse that could go early.
That's what Nick thought,
because,
too.
Yeah, because, you know, that's just Baffert's style to begin with.
Yep.
And this is a horse that when he gets to that front, he's really dead game. I mean, he's a horse that likes to be ridden hard anyway, and he likes to fight. And, you know, I just think that Bob Baffert does not like horses that have to try to catch horses. You know, he likes his horses to break well, and he does not like to give away any ground once you do break well. You know, I think, like, in Concert Tours last race, I don't think he liked the fact that he ceded the lead. You know, he liked the race beforehand where the horse took it early. And I think he's the type of guy that would like to live or die right there, 1-2. You know what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
I think that this horse could surprise people by actually being a part of the pace scenario.
And then Nick says he thinks that they'll take the point with Medina Spirit. So that fills that. That fills that question. I'm just kind of looking at the horses that I was looking for some commonality to the three. Sid is tabbing Bourbonic, Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality as the central three, with some exotic use for Obesos, Dynamic One, and Medina Spirit. Potentially, he would have to hang on, but Obesos and.
Exactly.
Dynamic One is certainly, he's actually been kind of versatile. He's been placed in a lot of different, other than his debut at 7/8, you know, from that point on, you know, four routes, he's been in different spots. I mean, he's got tactical speed and he's a tractable sort in here. Nice. There was one point I wanted to slip in, Sid, and now it's gonna slide away from me. Actually, All right. Well, good. There we go. So there's.
Well, we covered some ground here.
Yeah.
We gave you the horses as well as some commentary on the lawsuits and something else too, right?
Yeah. Exactly. One thing before we go. Any Oaks opinion?
Couple of things. I mean, I haven't really, you know, there's such a good group of fillies. I mean, you could take a Curlin Exacta in that race, and I wouldn't blame you. The race that I do like, the Eight Bells, I like Slumber Party in that race. Slumber Party was one huge first time out, but she what happened to her, which is some inside knowledge, is that she developed a bad infection, which knocked her out for a while. And, you know, when she came back, she still ran a good race, ran second, but was off her style. And I expect that this race back, she's going to come back to what we think she might really be. And so I think she's going to be pretty live in that race.
We happen to
do that mating too. So
yes, you got a little bit of a rooting interest, yes, no doubt
right,
about it.
Exactly.
Sid, and that is the Eight Bells is out of this world. It's funny. I ended the conversation with Jake Ballas and Jonathan Kinchin earlier with that, making that point, how entertaining the Eight Bells should be. Sid, I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it, Steve. I know you're busy, and best of luck. We'll talk next week.
You got it. We'll recap what goes on here at Churchill Downs. Let's do this. We're halfway through, and we'll take our only break of the morning, and then we'll come back, launch into the second half, 90 minutes, going to kick off with one of our most anticipated visits of Derby Week. Rogers, father and son, they're here. Big D and little D, although he's not so little anymore. And by the time we get here, I think for next year, he'll be Big D and you'll be little D. That's a distinct possibility. We'll get Darren's thoughts on that, and we'll get opinions from both Davis and Darren Rogers after this. Joe Clancy later in hour three, as well as Seth Merrow, as we start to accrue Derby opinions and selections and analysis. Back after this to Churchill Downs, Sirius XM at the Races. Here brought to you by Healthnetics. Let's get a Healthnetics plug in. Speaking of which, Marty McGee, probably tomorrow. Thoroughgraph, of course, everything you need to win. Hill and Dale and more. Back after this to Churchill.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents